Okay, this is Dion Gordon once again with the Dion Gordon Podcast. We're going to pivot in a different direction, talk about politics. It's the day after the election, and we still don't have full 100% confirmation as to who won. And that will be the topic of this particular discussion on this podcast today. How do you not win this particular election in a landslide? Joe Biden's going to win. As of right now, the news just came in. They won a pivotal battleground state, the state of Michigan. He is currently at 248 Electoral College votes. The incumbent president, Donald Trump, is at 214. If Biden can secure Arizona and Nevada, that will create a path to 270 and give him the victory in the Electoral College until, you know, Trump does the inevitable and try to take it to the Supreme Court, as he's already hinted at doing. But Biden is on the way to winning the Electoral College and becoming the 46th president of the United States of America. But this is a two-day, this has taken 2 days. And my point of contention, first of all, as someone who did not vote for Biden, did not vote for Trump, want to make that clear. Full disclosure, I placed a write-in vote for Dr. Cornel West, professor emeritus at Harvard and Princeton, and Nina Turner as his vice president. So I did not vote for either one of these racist, white supremacist pieces of shit. But I picked Biden to win. I told people in close circles that I thought Biden would win. I thought Trump's downfall would be his botched handling of the pandemic. 240,000 people dead and counting. Over 40 million people were without jobs at one point, without health insurance, currently in a depressed economy. So I thought that would be his undoing. Looking at the electoral map, I was reminded that a lot of people don't really care about the pandemic. A lot of the people who bitch, cry, and complain about having to wear a mask, they came out and voted, and they came out in large numbers in the Midwest and the South and voted red. So, once again, I was reminded that a large percentage of people in this country vote against their own best interest, but they also vote to protect white supremacy. So, it doesn't surprise me too much. But getting back to Biden, many people predicted in the past weeks, in the past months, that this was going to be a layup, an easy win, a landslide for Joe Biden. Going against this president, the most hated, reviled, loathed, despised president ever, the most polarizing president of all time, Donald J. Trump. Mention that name, argument going to break out in some capacity. Vote blue no matter who was the rhetoric I heard from people on the left, when I heard on mainstream television, when I see on the majority of my social media news feed. Vote blue no matter who. Well, maybe you should get better candidates so it wouldn't take this fucking long and you wouldn't leave it into interpretation, into potential litigation to win an election. Vote blue no matter who was always bullshit, and that's how we end up with a milquetoast neoliberal disaster in Joe Biden, who couldn't even beat this sorry-ass no-account president in a landslide victory. They put the ball on the tee. All Joe had to do was swing the bat. He swung and missed. He's going to win. But to me, and to a lot of other folks, it should have been and it could have been a much more decisive and clear victory. This was supposed to be a landslide. But Joe couldn't get the job done. And like I said, to me, he was the wrong candidate in the first place. I identify on the progressive left. I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter. Once again, full disclosure. And you go back to February to the Democratic primaries. The Democratic establishment did everything they could to screw Bernie out the victory. You know, I have always been a lifelong fan of professional wrestling, a lifelong historian, a nerd for wrestling. So I'll compare what happened to Bernie back in February to the Montreal Screwjob in 1997. Bret the Hitman Hart was the WWF champion on his way out, leaving WWF going to WCW. Had an infamous match against his hated on-screen and real-life rival, the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels. They had the match in Montreal in Canada. Bret, being a proud Canadian, did not want to lose the title to Shawn Michaels. He told Vince McMahon, the promoter, the owner of WWE, WWF at that time, "I'll lose the belt, but not to this dude and not in my home country of Canada." So during the match, they have the fight, or the pretend fight, whatever, it's a wrestling match. They have their match, and there's a spot in the match where Shawn Michaels has Bret in the sharpshooter, Bret's legendary finishing move, and Bret goes to reverse it, as was the plan. And as he's doing it, Vince McMahon, who now had appeared at ringside, told the timekeeper to ring the bell, much to the confusion of all parties involved, and Shawn Michaels won the match and screwed Bret Hart out of the title. I compare that to what happened in the Democratic primary. Barack Obama was Vince McMahon. He told the timekeeper to ring the bell. Joe Biden had Bernie Sanders in the sharpshooter. Bernie tried to reverse it, but Obama screwed him over and won the match and gave it to Joe Biden. That's how I look at it. Obama all of a sudden found his voice after 3 years of hiding, even after Trump, day after day, relentlessly assaulted his record, his policy, his character. And Obama, for the most part, remained quiet, silent on that. But when Bernie Sanders had emerged as the leader in the clubhouse to get the Democratic nomination, all of a sudden Obama found his voice and spoke up and orchestrated a coup to unseat Bernie Sanders, the more popular of the Democratic nominees, of the 712 people who ran to try to secure the Democratic vote. And he formed a coup. You had Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, who all of a sudden conveniently dropped out the day before Super Tuesday. Liz Warren stayed in to take away progressive votes from Bernie. Michael Bloomberg stayed in despite the fact that he wasn't getting any votes. Well, he got 5 delegates from American Samoa. So congratulations to Mike Bloomberg for wasting $500 million to get 5 irrelevant and useless delegates from American Samoa. But you had all that happen, and Biden vaults and catapults from 4th place to 1st place, despite the fact that he was not holding the same energized, passionate rallies that Bernie Sanders was holding. Despite the fact that Bernie was clearly the more popular candidate, especially amongst people 40 years and younger, especially with Latinos, Bernie had actual policy. Bernie could articulate his policy, but Joe Biden was a representation of the status quo, the elite. And so he was able to go mysteriously, miraculously, go from 4th to 1st place and take over as a Democratic nominee. And now here he is, and now he's on the cusp of becoming the 46th president of the United States of America. He will have accomplished this despite the overall arrogance of the Democratic establishment, who thought that all he had to do was pay attention to college-educated people and white suburbanites to get votes. That was all you need. The further arrogance of the Democratic Party, thinking that the token symbolism and identity politics of appointing Kamala Harris to be your vice president was enough to get the black vote. Having an endorsement from Senator Jim Clyburn in South Carolina was enough to get the black vote. Joe Biden being Barack Obama's friend was enough to get the black vote. You know, Joe Biden is like the best example of, I'm not racist, I got a black friend. The dude who wrote the 94 crime bill, a 47-year history of being racist and antithetical to the black existence. He gets a pass. He's loved now by black people because he has a famous black friend. You had all this identity politics, and yet the black male vote for Trump increased from 13% in 2016 to 18% this year. The black female vote for Trump doubled from 4% in 2016 to 8% this year. Go figure. He also accomplished this by reaching out to Republican refugees, I'll call them, the Never Trumpers, the neoconservatives, people like the Lincoln Project, the type of people you see on MSNBC, a supposed liberal-leaning network that has reached out to warmongers, neoconservatives, former Republicans like Steve Schmidt and the other members of the Lincoln Project to try to appeal to them more than appealing to the progressive left. Biden's made no mistake about, made no bones about saying, I'm going to be a bipartisan president. I'm not going to be a president for the red or for the blue. I'm going to be a president for the United States of America. I will not hesitate to reach across the aisle and work with Republicans to get things done. Look at the people Biden has already begun vetting for positions in his cabinet. Republican Senator Jeff Flake, John Kasich of Ohio, Massachusetts GOP Governor Charlie Baker, Charlie Dent from Pennsylvania, another Republican who resigned from Congress in 2018 and became a lobbyist, CEO of Quibi and former CEO of eBay, Meg Whitman. These are all the people Biden has already begun vetting to put in his cabinet when he does take office. These are people with Republican ties to big corporations, ties to the establishment. There will be no progressives in Joe Biden's cabinet. AOC will not have a job. Bernie Sanders will not have a job. Liz Warren, maybe, but is Liz Warren really a true progressive? That can be debated, especially after the snake behavior she displayed turning her back on Bernie. This is going to be a moderate, centrist Republican president, Republican masquerading as a Democrat president, with a largely moderate centrist right-wing cabinet working in conjunction with a right-wing conservative Senate, since the Republicans held on to their advantage in the Senate, even though it was projected and rumored and talked about they were going to lose their stranglehold in the Senate. They were able to win the majority of their races on Tuesday night and extend their prominence in the Senate. Most of the chagrin of Democrats, people like Pelosi everywhere, who were 24 hours prior, were bragging and talking about this as if it was going to be a coronation for the Democrats on Tuesday. Tuesday is supposed to be another blue wave similar to the midterms in 2018. It didn't pan out that way. Biden is more than likely going to be president, but you look around the rest of the Democratic landscape, it's unfulfilling. It took some losses. You look at people like Mike Parson, the anti-mask governor from Missouri, from Black Lives Don't Matter Missouri, who was reelected. QAnon weirdo Marjorie Taylor Greene won her election. Proud Confederate Cindy Hyde Smith won reelection. John Cronin from Texas was able to pick up reelection. Crybaby, douchebag, ass-kissing, phony fraud Lindsey Graham gets to sell out America for another 6 years in South Carolina. And the biggest victory of all for Republicans, Moscow Mitch McConnell, gets another 6 years in the Senate, winning his election in the state of Kentucky. 6 more years to pack the courts with ultra-conservative judges. So when you project this forward, yes, Biden is going to be the president, but he's going to encounter political gridlock in Washington similar to the last 4 to 6 years of Obama's presidency, where you couldn't get anything done because you had Republican opposition at every turn being led by Mitch McConnell. Or at least that was always the excuse they gave. They couldn't get anything done because of the Republicans. But it's going to be just a reenactment of that. But I keep going back to this. The fact that this is not a landslide victory, the fact that there's going to be massive fallout, potential litigation, not even potential, certain litigation, but this thing can get tied up in the courts and drag out for days, weeks, months, who knows. If it was a landslide victory, you would have avoided all that. If you had a candidate who was worth a fuck, who inspired confidence and hope in the American people, if you had a candidate who did not look down on the progressive left, who did not go out of his way to dismiss the Bernie Sanders and AOCs of the world, if you had a candidate who embraced a popular policy such as Medicare for All, instead of going on MSNBC and telling Lawrence O'Donnell, hypothetically speaking, if and when I do become president and Medicare for All were to somehow reach my desk, I would veto it in the middle of a pandemic, which has killed hundreds of thousands of people. If you had a candidate who embraced the Green New Deal, who knew what fracking was, who embraced marijuana reform, the legalization of marijuana, which is, once again, pay attention to the electoral map, look at some of the other things that happened on Tuesday night. The legalization and decriminalization of marijuana is largely popular. But this is something you don't hear Democrats talk about in the mainstream. The recreational marijuana was legalized in Arizona, New Jersey, Montana, South Dakota, Mississippi approved medical marijuana. But you won't hear Biden talk about marijuana reform on a national scale. You won't hear Kamala for the bulk of her time in politics has been against marijuana reform. She's locked a lot of brothers up for having an eighth of weed on them. These people reject popular policies. Medicare for All is favored by 69% of voters. Green New Deal is popular. It's favored by 59% of voters. These are popular policies. These are what regular, everyday, working class people are telling you they want. You had such a cry, such an uproar over the summer about Black Lives Matter in the direct aftermath of the public lynching of George Floyd for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. The absolute debacle that took place in the state of Kentucky with the death of Breonna Taylor and the way that was handled. You had Ahmaud Arbery getting killed for going jogging. You had Jacob Blake catch 7 warning shots in his back in Kenosha, Wisconsin. You had the death of Elijah McClain in the state of Colorado. All this talk over the summer, all this civil unrest, all this talk about social justice, criminal reform, police reform, etc., protecting black lives, making black people relevant, Black Lives Matter. And what do people do? They go against that. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are antithetical to all that. Marching from sea to shining sea, from Oakland, California, where I'm currently at, to Frederick, Maryland, and where I was born. People talking about defund the police. Joe Biden can't get far away from defund the police fast enough. He can't dismiss that quickly enough. Kamala Harris, you know she ain't gonna talk about defunding the police. She's a cop herself, pretty much. So you have black people marching all over the place with picket signs talking about defund the police, we got to do this, we got to do that, we got to start taking this shit seriously. Black Lives Matter. You turn around and vote for the tough on crime ticket? You turn around and vote for Jim Crow Joe, who authored the 94 crime bill? You turn around and vote for Kamala Harris? Her record speaks for itself. A lot of brothers serving time, a lot of evidence withheld. From a strategic standpoint, it made no sense to have her as the VP. Joe Biden's going to win this election, but it's going to be a lot closer than it should have been. And one way he could have won it, and another way he could have won it in a landslide, if you pick the VP that helps you get votes in places you have trouble getting votes. You don't struggle getting the black vote. You're running as a Democrat. You're Obama's homeboy. You don't need help getting the black vote. You can go to any black household in America. If someone 50 or older is living there, I guarantee you they'll have pictures of three people: Jesus Christ, Martin Luther King, and Barack Obama. So all you gotta do is be affiliated with Obama and Democrat, you already got the black vote sewn up. Kamala is also from the state of California. Once again, you don't need help in the state of California if you're a Democrat. Anybody can run for president as a Democrat and pick up those 55 electoral college votes in the state of California. This state will always be a blue state. Certain states you're never going to flip. For the blue side, California, Maryland, D.C., New York. On the Republican side, Texas, Florida, Georgia, the South and Midwest in general, for the most part, typically always going to be red states. But if I'm picking a VP, I'm picking someone that can help me win states, the swing states, the states I might need help winning. Pick someone from the Midwest, from the South. We saw it in 2016 about, you know, Democrats once again playing identity politics, trying to guilt trip you into voting for a woman. That doesn't work. People will vote for whoever they believe in, whoever they think can affirm their dignities, whoever they think can advance their lives in a positive way, whoever they think can help them put food on the table for their family. It's not about identity politics. You look at that electoral map right now, the Midwest and the South is very red. How many people do you think went to the polls and voted for Trump and against Joe Biden thinking that if something happens to Biden, Biden's going to be the oldest president in U.S. history, 79 when he takes office next year. You don't think that people voted against him thinking that, well, if something happens to him, we're going to have a black woman as our president. This is a racist-ass country. Call it what it is. Let's face facts and deal with reality. I would guess a lot of people voted against Joe Biden because he had a black woman as his VP, and they don't want a black woman to eventually be their president. Let's just call it what it is. So it didn't hurt him ultimately because he's going to win, but it definitely made it closer than what it needed to be. Stop playing identity politics, Democrats. Like I said, people see through that shit. That token symbolism means nothing to the guy working 12 hours a day trying to feed his family. That token symbolism means nothing to the millions of people who are waiting on a second stimulus check. People don't care about that. People don't want identity politics. They don't want token symbolism. They want policy. They want substance. They want legitimate work being done in Washington. They want money in their pocket. They want food on their table. They want their kids to be safe. Black people want to be safe from the police. They want real legislation instead of just talking points. Instead of Democrats wearing kente cloths. Instead of Democrats saying, well, we gave you a black VP. What else do you want? The American people routinely tell the establishment what we want, and the establishment routinely looks back at us and says, you don't know what you want. I'll tell you what you want, and you'll fucking like it. And that, in a nutshell, is why this election that had no business being this close was actually close. A razor thin, a cunt hair margin is basically separating Joe Biden from Donald Trump, the worst president we've ever had, the most incompetent, inept, racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic, worthless president we've ever had. The living embodiment of white privilege, the gatekeeper of white supremacy, should have been soundly defeated, and yet it's taken multiple days and it's this close, and it might drag on and on in the court system. If you had a better candidate, you wouldn't have to deal with this. People can hear this, they can feel however they want to feel about it. I personally don't care. It's my fucking podcast. But this is just me calling what I see. So congratulations to Joe Biden on being the 46th president. But I would tell anyone listening to this, my message for the American people, we could do better. We have to do better. So once again, this is Dion Gordon from the Dion Gordon Podcast. Picture me rolling. I'm out.